You have a product or service that would benefit the Paychecks and Balances audience? Maybe you want to increase awareness of your side hustle. Regardless, we're here to help.
So we're providing our entrepreneurial listeners a chance to share their thing on the show without breaking the bank. So to learn more about how you can reach thousands of listeners, visit paychecksandbalances.com/small business. Again, paychecksandbalances.com/small business. Now on with the show. Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we chop it up about work and money for millennials, with the hope we don't leave you saying, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances, and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. And you can submit questions on our website at paychecksandbalances.com.
Yeah, I think it's funny how calm you stay no matter how much I yell when I'm doing the intro.
I think that's all part of the transition.
So, special shout out to PNB patrons and executive producers Michael Minix, Mo S, and Stephanie S, formerly K. If you're like, why do they get shout outs, or you're interested in a chance to be on the podcast, visit our Patreon page by going to paychecksandbalances.com/patron. It'll give you all the answers you need. Again, paychecksandbalances.com/patron.
And patron is PATRON, just in case you were wondering for the folks at home. Some people I know were wondering. And thanks to those that have left us a 5-star review on iTunes since our last roll call. At the moment, I see new 5-star reviews from K. Shapri, Power On Gamer, and MFNG35. I assume that stands for something, but MFNG35, unless you know who that is, Rich, you'll have to write in and clarify what that is.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's MF and Greatest 35 or something very similar to that. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I figured that's what the MF stood for, but I didn't want to assume.
So this week we've got it's kind of a money minute / this week in work hybrid. So we could jump right into it.
Boom. Days go slow, years go fast. This week's money minute. But before I get into that, I just going to hit folks with over the head every week until tax return season's over April 18th, Tuesday this year, if we make it that far. Save 20% of your tax return. So I'm going to hit y'all every week with just a constant reminder. Save 20% of your tax return. Do it. It's easy. You know, the average tax return is like $3,500. Put 20% to the side. Boom. You'll have more savings in your savings account than like 60% of Americans. So let's start this year off on the right foot.
Is it really that high? $3,500 is like the average?
Yeah, I actually think it's higher than that, but if I remember correctly, the average is about
$3,500. Oh, cool. That's what's up.
Which I thought about doing this, I'll be honest, because someone wrote in with this tip about balancing your IRS tax return and adjusting throughout the year. So basically, you either owe or you break neutral. But, you know, I'm not going to lie. You know, even though all I talk about, I like the tax return at the end of the year, and I wouldn't want to get it wrong. So that is something you can do. You can adjust your W-4, I believe it is, through the course of the year. But I ain't going to do it.
Nah, I don't got the discipline.
That's not some advice I can readily add. However, that is an avenue that is available to you. So if you do get the tax return at the end of the year, I mean, it's your money anyway. I think people have this misrepresentation of what a tax return is. It's basically the government has borrowed money from you that is yours and you haven't been earning interest or making it rain on. So it's your money. It's not like you're getting the government money. You're getting your own money back.
I think that's a real big misconception for people. And even I make that mistake sometimes myself. I'm like, yeah, I got this extra money coming in. And it's like, it's not really extra at all. I've been overpaying on some level all year and I'm just getting back what I've already earned.
Yeah. So this week's money minute, that was a little money tangent, is actually more of a give me a minute. So I think in the end, most actions impact your money. So maybe, you know, existentially, we're always talking about money, including your inaction. So the opposite of not acting also impacts your money as well. But I want to speak to an approach that I'm going to try in 2017 and I recommend for the people. I'm going to do a little throwback to episode 15 because we were talking about our 5-year plans still relevant for millennials. Do you have any new thoughts on this?
I still think 5 years is too far out. I think I have a at least for myself, I still have a vision of ultimately where I'd like to end up, but where exactly I'll be on that continuum in 5 years, bro, I'm just trying to get through this next 12 months. I'm just trying to get through the 17 right now. That's all I'm thinking about.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, and I think it might depend on where you are on the current plane, if you will, so to speak, because I, in an almost hypocritical way, was speaking to one of my higher ups recently, and I was like, yeah, I was giving some thought to where I'll be in the next 3 to 5 years, but that's because of some specific changes that are going on within my organization and specific to my career. So I have to think in the terms of 5 or 3 to 5 years because of where my position may be. I vest at 5 years. So the way my current profession is set up kind of forces me to think on a longer scale.
So can you say what you mean by vest? Because that means different things to different people. Because I guess, at least from what I know, given the sector you work in, that might be different than what vest may mean for someone who's just thinking like 401k.
So for me, it would be that I would get a defined benefit paid back to me upon retirement, allegedly. You know, I mean, on paper, that's what it says. But, you know, my thoughts and my conspiracies about whether it'll all be around. And I vested in another similar defined benefit plan at another organization. So ideally, in simple terms, what that would mean is, at somewhere between, I think I can retire early at 55, but if I did full benefit retirement at 65, I believe in both plans, I can get a check delivered to me, whatever my address may be at that time, until I take the escalator upstairs. I was trying to think of a nice way to say that. Yeah, until I ride the infinite escalator, I guess.
So do you worry at all about that, though? Because I've read some things about pensions and defined benefits and the money that they say will be in the fund all these years later won't actually be there, kind of like what you hear about Social Security. So have you worried about that at all?
I do. The plan that I was in before was about 98% funded. I mean, that's now. The plan I'm in now, I believe, is closer to 80% funded. Now, mind you, it's a, I don't want to call it a pyramid, but it sort of is, because it's not like everyone pulls it out at the same time. People are going to retire early. People are going to retire late. Mm. It's an actuarial analysis. There's going to be individuals that don't make it to the escalator.
Oh.
And so they'll never pull it out. So there's a bunch of actuarial analysis and math that would go into it. So for me, it will probably be around regardless of how well or poorly funded it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Now, whether it's around in another 40 to 50 years to be determined.
So you mentioned the escalator, which I thought meant going to heaven. And you said some people will never get there and so never get their money. So does that mean if you're going to hell, you don't get your money?
I actually just meant if you pass away before retirement age, you never pull from the retirement pool.
Oh, yeah. I was clearly on some other level there. My bad. Good brother.
I just meant the escalator to the sky, which technically could also, I guess you don't take an escalator to the ground. I mean, you know, we might be getting a little bit afar in this metaphor here, but I just meant the escalator to the clouds.
All right. My bad.
Whatever's on the other side of that clouds is between you and your maker.
If you believe in that sort of thing.
You know.
Whatever.
So that would be the two plans that I'm looking into. To answer your question, it's interesting because someone asked me something similar recently. So I guess regardless of having a defined benefit pension plan, I was trying to stay away from saying that, but you know, I actually think pension plans are awesome. I'm biased.
Yeah, of course.
But I actually don't know why we're getting rid of them. That being said, I won't get into the pros and cons of that. Someone was asking me, you know, so how do you feel about, at that time it was a 457k and I'm in a 401k plan now. I think you should just never put all your eggs in one basket. So I would not be dependent, and I am actively not dependent on one form of retirement income. I'm just not comfortable. And to your point, I'm not maybe even secure enough to rely on it. I think this generation has seen too many companies or organizations not being traditionally beholden to what you thought was historical, unnegotiable norms. And I'm thinking specifically of GM. Like, these individuals, you retire, you think you have a set either pension or plan or retirement fund. You based your entire life around, and you're beyond working age now. And they're just like, nah, no file for bankruptcy. And nah, no thank you.
Yeah, see? That's the worry.
And I mean, GM is one of the larger ones, but that's happened before, where a lot of these individuals, and I think we're seeing it in our either our parents or maybe perhaps a generation beyond that, our grandparents, where you built your life around this plan, and now that plan either no longer exists or it's unfunded at a rate much less than what you built your life around. In your golden years, your retirement years, you're supposed to be enjoying life. That was the whole point of why you worked hard, or they told us to work hard, and then, you know, you retire and enjoy your golden years. You sit in the little tubs on the beach like in the Cialis commercials. No plug.
That's like the last commercial I would have thought about, but I think it pretty much makes the point nonetheless.
Yeah. And so for me, it still goes back to right now, I put in 9%, they match 9%. So that's 18%. And I have pulled out 1% now. It was 5. But as I talked about, I've been reallocating some funds for 2016 going into 2017. Also read an interesting article about upping your benefits totality 1% every year, regardless of how you go about it. So I might look into that, because I think I'm going to push it back up 2% next year for a total investment of 20%. So as I said on the show, the goal is to be at 20. I'm at 19. Mashable had an article that came out in 2016 that said millennials will probably see returns of 5%. So they should actually be investing 22% towards retirement. So
wait, why 22%?
In order to get the same returns that you would see historically at 7%, you would have to be putting in 22%. They've been recommending in the past that you put 20% aside for retirement. Mm-hmm. However, it looks like the historical averages that were somewhere between 7 and 8% are now closely aligned to 5 and 6%, and they don't seem to be returning to 7 to 8% returns anytime soon, if ever.
Wow. So that's almost like tripled then, if I'm understanding that right.
No. The historical returns on investments have been 7 to 8%. The plan is that you pull about 3 to 4% of your retirement income, and that's what you live on in retirement. Mm-hmm. What they're saying is, in order to get that pool, now millennials would have to be putting 22% aside. So it's actually only a 2% change to make up for that 2% loss of returns that you would be seeing like in an investment plan.
Got it.
And I mean, I just think that's a real reality. I've kind of been working behind the scenes, and you know, I'm not an investment advisor, which I think in some ways, in talking to investment advisors, makes me far more objective. I'm like, this number doesn't match this number that you have in the brochure. Like, the returns I'm seeing here doesn't match what I'm seeing in your shiny brochure. And they're like, oh, yeah, blah, 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 BS, BS, BS. And I'm like, as I said, the number here doesn't match the number there. And I think now they're just coming around to admitting it. I haven't seen 7-8% returns consistently in years, if not the greater half or majority of my career. So it was insane to me that they kept pushing this marketing scheme, really, at the end of the day, and we weren't, no one was seeing those types of returns. It may be the investment bankers and the 1%, but me out here in the real world, not in any of those two classes, I wasn't seeing that, and it didn't make sense to me for a long time. So it was uncomfortably comfortable to finally see it come out that, hey, millennials might expect to see 5 to 6% returns on stock market investments. I just think that's honest.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking about how many people are getting got by the marketing. They're like, oh, if I do this, I'm going to get, you know, double or triple the percent, or I'm going to have this much of a greater likelihood, when most people are going to just fall back down to the range that you just provided. So be careful out there.
Yeah. I guess the whole point of that is, again, not putting all of your, and I tend to be more conservative. So even when they were telling me, you know, 6-7%, I invested like I'd get 5-6, because why should I assume, especially for 65-year-old me, that that's the mark that I'm going to hit? So I would be more conservative and say, how much do I need to be investing if I was only going to get 5% return? Now it's kind of looking like what I was conservatively investing is actually the actuality. So we'll see how that works out. But I think for the individuals out there that have an opportunity, and as we harp on this on a lot of shows, if you're younger, invest early. Because compound interest will help you regardless. So invest early and invest often. I mean, we're trying to change mid. We've talked about this. Are we midstream or downstream? But we are definitely trying to change.
Yeah, I think we're early mid.
Upstream.
Yes, I think. That sounds about right.
So with all that being said, what I'm trying to do for 2017 is I noticed that I was getting overwhelmed with, man, I'm not doing enough, or I'm not doing it all, almost to a point where I felt guilty for just relaxing on the weekend. I'm like, yeah, I put in 40 hours, but this constant hustle, I need to be doing something. I need to be doing something. Mm-hmm. And not really, because it feels like you've never done enough. And it's strange because it's also counterintuitive to this work-life balance that I think I and many other people claim they want to strive for. But then, I don't know about you, I feel guilty when I'm not doing something on the weekend. And then I, you know, log on to whatever social media may be, and someone's like, oh yeah, I'm working on this, you know, finance plan, new year, new me. And I'm like, oh man, I need to be doing something besides looking at this person doing something on social media.
Yeah.
I mean, do you find that happening to you?
I will say I'm one of those people that when the weekend comes around, I am working on other stuff. Now, I take time to relax too, but I think it kind of comes back to this idea of having some type of plan or where you want to be in a year and or 2 years. And I'm kind of like, I know if I don't keep moving along on these certain things, even if it's on the weekend, that that's going to push the timeline out for that 12-month goal. And I really want to stay on track with that. So I don't get crazy with it. And I'm not the person who's like scoffing, like, you're relaxing on the weekend. Wait, you're not doing work? You're not trying to live your dreams? Like, I'm definitely not that. I'm definitely not that person, but I do find myself actually doing things on the weekend to try to create that lifestyle that I want down the road. And I think that's the thing, though, because a lot of people, especially with the whole instant gratification thing, it's like, I want work-life balance and I want to not be able to work, but you've got to sacrifice for some time period to ultimately have whatever it is that you want. Unless, of course, you hit the lotto, but that's like one in almost an infinite number of us who are going to have that chance.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said it that way. As far as, I think it's also a matter of where and when do you work as well. So it's one thing to have that work-life balance, but I think as highlighted by, I believe it was Tanya on her episode is, of at My Fat Finance, is you really just reallocate where you work. So I think a lot of us have this idea, oh, I'm going to work for myself so I can work less, but you actually might work more but be happier in those hours that you're using because it doesn't feel like work if you're kind of embodying your purpose or your hobby, or, you know, what is the saying? If you get a hobby, you'll never have to work a day again. And I think that's more of what it is. So I think you have to actually, in some cases, and maybe infinitely put in more hours to better align with what personally fulfills you.
Yeah.
But you're actually doing less work, or it feels like less work because it's more rewarding.
Yeah. I think no matter what, when you're just getting started with a side hustle or something else, it's going to take a lot of time. And then, of course, as you get systems in place and things start running smoothly, maybe you can automate that a bit. But I also want to caution people, though, because if you're trying to do your side hustle thing so you can live the life you want, and it's a service-based business versus a product-based business, I think just naturally when you do something that's service-based, you're going to put more hours in. Unless, well, as I'm talking through this, I'm realizing that there could be a situation where maybe you get to a point where you can charge a crazy high rate so that you can make the same amount of money in less time. But I imagine most folks coming out the gates aren't going to be in a situation where they can do that. So that's also something I would caution people to think about. If you are trying to do your own thing on the side, are you thinking more so about a product-based business where you have something out there and then you're just promoting it versus having to constantly create a new version of that product? Or is it going to be the type of situation where maybe you're waking up early on a Saturday to work with clients, or you're coming home from work and then you got to jump on a call with clients, and how that's going to work for you? Because I have friends who do that now where they have their own consulting or coaching business on the side, and that's cool. But bro, I don't know about you, but when I get out of work after having done a full shift in the office, sometimes I don't want to talk to nobody.
Yeah, exactly. There's literally times where I get off work and I just don't want to think, which I think a lot of you are like, I just want to watch, you know, dumb TV with no plot and no purpose, eat and like turn my brain off.
Yep.
And then so what I'm trying to, then that's why I sometimes feel guilty when I get to the weekend and I'm like, well, yeah, I put in 40 hours for the job, but have I put in 40 hours for myself? And yet I'm exhausted and I want to enjoy my time off and I want to go out and live life and, you know, do things that extroverts do because I had to like purposely make that a skill set. But that being said, my workaround now is one improvement a week So I'm going to try to identify, and have been these first few weeks of the year, because that will be 52 personal improvements in 2017. And I just think that will, I can't see that not making me a better person. And as I've talked about, finding ways to make money instead of identifying so many ways that take money.
I like that idea. One thing a week. That's simple enough and it's manageable.
Another reason it came up is I was reviewing my budget, and I've pretty much, and a listener asked me about this last year, actually, you know, what happens when you've cut all the fat? Looking at my budget, with the exception of selling my car and maybe living in a box, and neither of which I'm going to do, I've pretty much trimmed all the fat off of my budget that I can. Like anything that I felt that I was wasting, cutting the cable, reviewing my insurance plans, cutting there where I can, just maybe being more responsible in how many times I eat out and what meals I take to work. I've kind of gotten into a habitual pattern there where those budgetary needs, that disposable income, is trimmed. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, well, if I can't cut anymore, I mean, well, I'm done cutting in areas that I want to cut. There's always places you can cut.
Right.
I have a light on right now that I'm looking at. I could probably turn off, but I'm like, yeah, you know what? I want the fan on. You know, it is what it is. It gets to a point where I'm like, well, what additional sacrifices can I make in the budget? I'm like, well, I think I'm maxed out. Now, mind you, I'm pretty good. I think, as I talked about on a few shows, I'm around 50% now. I haven't done the exact math, but it just occurred to me that I'm around living on 50% of my current budget, which is, you know, awesome for me, before I spent 125% of my budget or something, some other math that just didn't work out very well.
Yeah.
Which even made me fortunate to even start thinking about this. So I'm like, okay, I've trimmed all the fat on the budget. Now, where can I grow the income? And some of those are going to be these personal improvements, mostly geared around doing things that, like I said, make money versus take money.
Right, right.
As I've talked about on a few shows, even if that's just a conscious decision, deferred expenses, like I'm just not going to do this activity. Yes, I want to go here. I want to do that. I want to do X, Y, and Z, but I'm going to do it with more purpose. I'm going to do that in March, June, and August instead of let me do this bulk spending and travel all around the world and the country, and then I'm back in the hole by the summer. I'm like, no, I these something good.
Well, and I was going to say that that's something that I've thought a lot more about for 2017 than I probably have in past years. And in past years, I have had a budget line for trips, conferences, things that may come up. And for whatever reason, I've still managed to go over that number. And I guess maybe that's just a natural thing for people to do. But this year, I've been a lot more deliberate about, all right, here are the things that I absolutely want to make it to. Here are the things that would be nice to make it to if I come across some extra money. And here are the things that I maybe went to in the past or have gone to in the past, grammar, whatever, that while it may have been fun, it wasn't the best use of my time or money given some of these other priorities that I've given myself for this year. And that's helped a lot in terms of just figuring out where I'm going to spend and when that money is going to be going out, where I think in the past I would have like an ongoing line item for it, but I didn't necessarily know when I was going to spend that unless it was like a conference that I go to every year. So I think I'm with you on that.
Yeah. And I think it's important to set, and probably even more importantly, to monitor those priorities. Because what I used to do is I do really well for 3 months. And then I'm like, I deserve a reward. And I'd spend 3 months of income in 1 month.
Yep.
And then I'd be like, well, that was stupid. So now, and it's been, you know, all of this has been a transition. It's helping me a lot. I can't even really put a line item number to this, but being back home, basically every trip home back in the day cost about $1,000. I calculated this one time between hotel, rent, vehicle, eating out, and then, you know, bulk spending because I'm seeing my friends. So if I knew if I was going to take a trip either with friends or go see friends, that was about $1,000. So basically, I've deferred. I don't even know how many trips I took over the years. All that's gone because now I'm like, well, I'm going to come see y'all this weekend. Let me just hop on the road. So all I have to spend is gas. And even if I want to save money on a hotel, I just need to find a friend or a family member and be like, hey, I'm crashing with y'all. Whose room or place is available this weekend? And I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Like, it's, I guess, all coming to an intersection now, these benefits that I've had over the years. And now I'm kind of thinking more purposefully for, okay, what do I need to be doing next?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a good start for people, is just kind of working incrementally and still coming back to the one thing a week, or, and so maybe there's one bigger thing per month that you're working towards. So I think if people can break it down to manageable bite-sized chunks, that'll make it a lot easier to monitor and a lot easier to make progress.
I agree. And on that episode, PB15, we actually recommended 90 days. So if you took what do you need to do in the next 90 days, instead of this 3 year, this 5 year, and then you get overwhelmed and thus you do nothing, and then break that down into weekly chunks or bites, I think that would be a lot easier for people to process. And I have a real example of this because it occurred to me recently that I kind of have a what I'm going to call a career tripod going as it pertains to this 3 to 5 year plan. So the traditional plan, I guess these are not in order of most favorite, would be work 9 to 5. I don't even work a 9 to 5. I don't even know why I just said 9 to 5. It is just such a, I guess, a cultural appropriation that I'm going to go with 9 to 5, even though that's not even my schedule. And retire, if I'm lucky, in 35 years. I mean, and we talked about this. I think you can relate, but I have a job that I could literally do for the next 35 years. No question. No one would bother me. I'd show up. I could do it. I might even work my way up in the organization, and I can retire from this particular career field that I have chosen. That's just the way it is. And a lot of people do. A lot of people have. A lot of people are actively planning to do that right now. And there, let me be clear, there is nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But if that is not the plan that I see for myself, then that is not the path that I can continue to follow. And right. So I'm like, all right, so what's my backup plan to the traditional plan? And that could look like transition and replace my current income with a side hustle or passive income streams until I transition full time into self-employment. And I think this, and I've spoken to this on a few episodes, that might in itself be a flaw. And I think it's a flaw that or trap that many of us fall into because we're so programmed around 9 to 5. You work one job, you work two, you know, you have your work-life balance, but that might not hold true going forward. And we talked about that on the slasher episodes where people have these business cards where it's, you know, family planner / mathematician / statistician / data analyst / mixtape CD artist. So I'm like, you might want to, you know, divide that up a little bit. But I really think that that might be in order to hit that revenue stream or peak that traditionally either used to or for many of us came from either our families or ourselves from one job, you might have to think, you know, what 2, 3, 4, 5 or whatever your maximum allocation may be, could I do to bring in the income that I need to live the life that I want? And what is that balance?
Yeah, I think trying to do 4 or 5 different jobs is definitely crazy. I think there's a way where people can come up with multiple income streams without spreading themselves so thin because, and I think this is part of what you're getting at. It's hard enough to do one other thing when you're already doing a 9 to 5.
Right.
So if you're going to do 3, 4 different things, there's going to be something that you're pretty crappy at within that list of things.
Yeah, there was some article, and I wish I remembered the exact math. I'm not going to be able to do it right now in my head, but it was like you have 17 free hours. Like when you subtract work and like if you slept 8 hours, wasn't it like something depressing, like you have 17 hours to yourself or something like that to do whatever your hustle may be?
Yeah. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I know that I was feeling a little melancholy afterward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's not as many hours, especially if you already work 40 hours a week. And that's assuming that you cut off right at the 40th hour. Left to do these side hustles. So again, going back to the priority now, and we talked about this with Lisa on her episode, the pros of work, you know, steady paycheck, health insurance, and general stability. That is probably greatly underrated these years because everybody work for yourself and dream your dream and your purpose. And, you know, hey, that's cool, but my purpose doesn't pay my bills right now. You know, I haven't been able to locate him in the hallway. I can't sign fulfilling my purpose when rent is due. No. I wish I could. I put that in the memo line right now. But until it is, you know, that's the cons. There's no ready sense of purpose. some days, I mean, there's days where I'm like, okay, I've gotten pretty good at this. You know, I'm generally respected. I teach, I train, I've received accolades, pats on the back. I've received literal handshakes from high up individuals, but it's not personally aligned with what I thought or I thought I would be doing or see myself doing in the future. And again, it's no one's fault. It's not bad. It's just like, you know, that's cool.
Cool story,
you
bro.
You know, that's refreshing. Yeah, yeah. But I'm just like, cool. There's a meme floating around. You know, one of the great punishments of life is to be great at something that you are dispassionate about. I mean, I think that's true. Like, could you imagine being great? Well, actually, I don't think people even have to imagine it. I'm sure there are people who are great at their jobs and they get somewhere between zero to negative infinity personal satisfaction from it.
You know what? I think that's a large number of people. And I don't have any official stats, but I was reading something about the percentage of people who are disengaged at work. And I want to say it was like above 50% or something like that.
Yeah, I remember that. And I believe it was above 50%. And you were even more disengaged if your boss was disengaged.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely above 50% in that case.
And so now, I would say now, that kind of brings me to the third leg of the tripod is the backup plan. And that's to use side hustle or passive income to save more to retire earlier. And we talked about this on JD's episode. I'll have all these linked in the show notes for the record, but that's Paychecks and Balance episode 34. And he talked about if you maximize your retirement savings, which is actually what we were talking about earlier in this very episode, you could retire 17 years earlier. So, I mean, that's a middle ground, you know, retiring in your 40s instead of your 60s. I think that's a little bit above a moral victory. What are your thoughts?
Man, that would mean it's like around the corner, even though that probably still be like a decade. That's what it would feel like. Yo, you know what? And this is a good point with this. So if I knew that I would seriously have the chance to retire in the next decade, potentially, that might change the way that I approach some things today. Now, I tend to be a realist about stuff. Yes, I can be overly ambitious, but I'm like, man, it's going to take me earning so much. And maybe I do have some great fortune that something magical that happens that puts me in a position to be able to do that. But for most people, I think that's what makes it so difficult for them to take action in the present, because thinking about waiting till you're 60 something to be able to access something versus waiting 10 years, you know, if you're in your 30s, that's a big difference, man.
Yeah. And I believe it's somewhere around 15 to 17,000 as far as how much you can. And that's just if you were to do a true investment retirement account, IRA or 401k through your job. But of course, you can, you know, put money anywhere you want. It's just specifically for retirement. There's a maximum amount for tax reasons. But that being said, yeah, I mean, that's the exact point. I remember, I forgot who we had on the episode, but they were like, yeah, in your 40s. And normally back in my dad, like, man, 40s, that's so long away. Now I'm like, man, that's right around the corner.
Like, I know, I see it, like, it's there.
Yeah, man, it's definitely a different mindset. So I know we're probably about half and half where some listeners are like, oh, 17 years, that still sounds like forever away. And the other half are like, man, only 17?
So I was like, 17 years, I'll be 35. That's our most ambitious, though.
Exactly, exactly. And so the catch 22 there, and, you know, this is what puts me in a really weird place is, okay, let's say, just even based on this conversation we've had right here on the show, let's say I could retire today. Let's say I get hit by the lottery tomorrow. I'm not the type of person who could sit around and at least be happy. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Like, I have to be doing something. I always got my hands in something. And I didn't realize that that was unique. I'm not type A, but I'm like maybe type A 0.5 or 0.85 of type A, because I always.
So you're type A minus.
Yeah. I always need to have my hands in something, because I pick up hobbies like, and probably people who have externally observed this recognize that, but I don't recognize that about myself. And it was actually somebody who pointed out about me. Because I asked them, I was like, man, what's your hobby? And they're like, I haven't had a hobby in 35 years and I can go another 35. Like, and I was like, that's insane. Because I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to do this week. I'm going to do this other thing this week. Man, I'm going to start a new website. I'm going to crash that website. Man, F that website. Like, I'm always like, I'm like, oh, that's cool. That's shiny. I feel like I do it practically. Like, I'm not the person that's like selling you wake up now pills on or a tummy tea on Facebook, you know, no shade.
Never that.
Like, I always keep, you know, something steady, like the 9 to 5, even though I don't work 9 to 5. And then I do all these hobbies on the side. So if I took away 40 hours a week, I'm really not sure what I would do with myself.
Well, have you thought about what would happen if you focused on one other thing for an extended period of time versus jumping from thing to thing?
I have. I already know what I want to do. I'm not sure I can make the money I want to make doing it.
That's a crucial point.
Yeah, I know some people are like, oh man, you know, money doesn't buy happiness and blah, 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 da, da, da. I like money. Or at least I like the things that money can do for me. Like, I've become the spoiled, like, trophy wife of myself. Like, I've got accustomed to my own lifestyle. Like, there's only so much I could willingly give up now. Like, I like traveling. I like doing things. I like going out from time to time. Now, mind you, I'm washed and I don't even go out like I used to. But I even like the option of going out. I tweeted on the TGOS account one time. Like, one weekend, I didn't even want to go out, but no one hit me up all weekend. And that made me upset. Like, that I didn't even have the opportunity to turn people down.
You were salty about not having the chance to say no. That's funny.
Yeah. Hashtag nah. But you know what? I recognize that about myself. So I think all of this is really just recognizing. I would say walking in your purpose is a part of probably better understanding myself, which I think I'm just getting better at. Like, hey, you know, could I reasonably see myself, you know, because we talked about this before, I could quit my job. Like, that's also an option. Like, there's no one forcing me to go to work and do this 9 to 5. And I could probably make a reasonable income doing some of these other things that I'm already doing, possibly making an okay living if I did them full time. Mm-hmm. But I have not identified a way to replace the income. And I've mentioned this on a previous show. It's my coworker jokingly and disappointingly told me, he's like, man, you got the golden handcuffs. So you can leave. You can walk out at any point. But now they've got you in a place where your lifestyle, again, I'll use that you become accustomed to, makes you show up for that 9 to 5 when you always thought you would break out of the mold.
That's so true, man. And I even think about that for myself and the plan that I have in terms of the number of years before, you know, I'm doing my own thing or whatever it is. And I'm like, man, I'm looking at all of the perks and benefits that I have now, and they're great. You know, I'm thankful for them, all of that other good stuff. But when I really crunch that number off of what it would take to maintain the lifestyle that I have out here, it was a really big number. And I was like, yo, that's going to take X amount of time unless I move. And so that's the wild card is, you know, will I be willing to move to a different part of the country where the money that I make now, let's say I was to save a year of that or 2 years of that, which would be extremely aggressive, that money would probably take me 2 or 3 times longer to burn through if I lived somewhere else in the country. So to, I guess, answer the question that I just posed to myself, I guess, yes, we're going to have to start evaluating some options down the road outside of the Bay Area.
Yeah, and I'll say a couple of things to that point for people who might be having this same consideration, because this is the math I use. I took, I guess, 3 lines. So I took my income now, which honestly I can make less because I'm already living on 50% of it. Then I took, okay, here's the minimum amount I think I could live on. Then I remembered that you have to talk about basically your benefits package. So I might, well, actually it looks like I will, have to get health insurance. Maybe if I want to put some money aside for retirement still. I guess that's not a maybe. I will have to put money aside for retirement still because my pension plan, if I leave before I vest, would be gone.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, now I got to put 30% back on top of the amount of money I think I can live on day to day. And I think that's where a lot of people miss. They're like, oh, I just need to make $50,000.
Nah.
I'm like, well, maybe. But put 30% on top of that because, you know, maybe unknown expenses, retirement, your health insurance, like that. Even, and I think 30% is conservative. So it would be 50,000 times 30% on top of the 50,000. And then, like you're saying, all right, you might have to, if you're willing to
relocate.
Yes, that's, it would be a piece of it. But can you maintain the expenses and lifestyle that you have now?
I would think for most people, especially if they're going to do their own thing, probably not.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
And I'm thinking about stuff. So, of course, there's healthcare benefits, and I work somewhere where they're very generous about it in terms of what the individual's co-pays are and what we pay out of our paycheck. But also, there's perks out here like no fee, or you don't pay for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. There's a shuttle I take to work that I don't have to pay for. And there are little things that I've gotten used to. And yes, I think a lot of people out here are spoiled in terms of what they make available to employees, self-included. But there's a lot of little stuff like that that we may have as a benefit that we get so accustomed to that we don't even factor it in when we start thinking about these conversations of what would it really take for me to be able to go about doing something on my own. Even something like gas, you know. So Bubukin, she takes the car to drive to work every week. But then let's say, you know, I do something that on the side that requires me to be able to drive around, and we have one car, then that means, now we have a situation where we need to have two cars in the household. And then that becomes an even bigger expense. And I don't know that people always make those connections, because it's almost like there's like hidden cost, I guess, but not like the shady ones when you buy something and they put something in the fine print.
Yeah. And while you were walking through that, actually, because I want to be fair, that there will also be some expenses you'll cut, because someone was talking to me, well, they're actually talking about working from home. They're like, well, if I worked from home, I wouldn't need to take my vehicle. So the average, I looked it up here, average cost to own and operate a vehicle based on 15,000 miles is $6,700 for a small sedan and $8,600 on average for a medium-sized sedan. Mm-hmm. So that's something I would say in half. Probably half of our mileage is us going to work. So you're going to put $4,000 back in your pocket as well if you have a service that you work from home, or maybe that's something you take to work to negotiate with. If you can negotiate, hey, I would like to work from home because, you know, here's some, I would, like you said, hidden or soft savings that you can get back into your pocket. And I don't think a lot of people think about that, because it's like, well, I'm just going to put gas in the car because the tank is on E. But you're not thinking about how much of that is because you're driving and work every week and sitting in traffic day to day.
Yeah.
To give some additional context, and I'll let you speak here, is just that putting that 30% back on top of 50,000 means you have to find something to make 65,000. Like, it's not pocket change. That's an additional 15,000 that you got to find in whatever your service is just to hit your goal of 50,000.
Yo, I spent so much time trying to do that math in the back of my head while we were talking, and it was not working at all. I was like, how much is that? And I just said, forget it. I'm glad you came back to it, though.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the point. And I'll find something else to end with, but this is what I was going to close out with. But now I realize a little bit depressing. And let me also point out, I mean, I saw the statistic yesterday. It's like a little bit over 30% of people are entrepreneurs already. So it clearly can be done. I mean, my usual baseline is somebody already doing it, then it can obviously be done. I actually hate when people say it can't be done. I'm like, there's millions of people already doing it. There's 37 million people doing it right now.
Pretty much.
So clearly it can be done. But, you know, I hate to say this, but I think we spoke to it a little bit. Part of my other uncertainty is I've never done it. Mm-hmm. I have been in this comfortable bubble, if you will. And I was even talking to somebody about, they're like, well, you know, how much do you have towards savings? I'm like, well, I have a baseline, but I don't even really do the 6 months foundation because I work in a fairly secure industry. I've never been laid off ever. I've faced the threat of layoff, which I've talked about on the show, but I've never been unemployed, you know, knock on wood and, you know, Lucky Clover or whatever other entity that you want to think. But that being said, you know, that's something else you have to take into consideration when you're working for sale. And the word that I'm trying to dance away from is, you know, it might just be outright fear. Like, knowing that all of my income, it's refreshing and comforting to know that every dollar that comes into my pocket would be of my own doing,
yeah,
my own will. And that is simultaneously terrifying, because now I know it's not really dependent on my will. I earn a salary. Like,
yeah.
I go, they expect at least 40 hours out of me. And, you know, I'm not, am I exempt or not exempt? I'm the one where I don't get overtime.
I think that's exempt.
So, you know, and we talked about this before, because there's been some weeks, every 41st hour is now cutting technically into my income without giving me that return on additional income.
Yeah.
And that would not be true if I worked for myself. So, I mean, I don't know another way to describe it other than there's definitely probably a fear component that has stopped me from embracing that lifestyle as quickly.
Oh, and so the other thing is, you can't coast when you're working on your own. I mean, unless you've got the revenue stream set up like that. But in a day job, I'm sure everyone has periods where they don't make the best use of their time at work. And there's weeks or maybe even months where they fly under the radar and they can coast. And they're going to get the same paycheck, the same amount of money, regardless of whether they actually work that 8 hours or they only spend 2 or 3 hours of their day working. Versus when it's your own business and you coast and there's days where you're not doing things to generate money, you can end up in a situation where you're not able to pay your rent.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that that's a big part of the fear component. Or maybe it's not the fear, but it's unsettling to know that if you were to then take time. So even vacation time for that matter, you know?
Yeah.
That's like something else. So it's like, all right, if I decide that the family's going to go on vacation for a week and I'm not going to touch work for 1 to 2 weeks, that's 1 to 2 weeks that I may not be making any money. That's something else to think about.
So I'm going to do that a little bit. So if you needed that $65,000 and you were to work every day, you would need something that would make you $178 a day. But if you just took a 2 week vacation, you would need now $185. And that's what I'm talking about. Like just those simple changes between $50,000 and $65,000 now means you're talking about $170 or $185 a day, or if you're going to take any type of vacation to sustain your lifestyle. And I think that's something that people don't account for, especially I think for people who transition out. I think if you were a true entrepreneur and you started like that right out of high school, these are probably things that are second nature to you. You're probably like, I've been thinking about this for 20, 30 years, but I'm only thinking about this now because I'm thinking of transitioning back out. Like how much do I need to literally make to the hour in order to sustain paying my rent this month?
Right, right.
Yeah, I think that's a reality. So overall, with the exception of all the uncertainty going on around me, I'm actually very optimistic about, you know, what I have in my control. And honestly, 2017, like for all intents and purposes, 2017 is like fairly awesome. Like all the things, and I talked about this as 2016 was closing out, all the things that I put into place to make this year and future years come together and be well are starting to bear fruit. All those seeds I planted are, you know, roses in the concrete or whatever. I'm just thinking ahead. You know, what are the seeds that I now need to plant to sustain these crops, I guess, sticking with that metaphor. And of course, we'll keep you all posted on how this unfolds. Any thoughts, sir?
Nah, man, I'm right there with you. It's all about figuring out how to get to this next level step. And like I said, I'm really just trying to get through this year at this point. And I think I feel similarly in that this year is shaping up to be awesome, despite some of the other things going on around the world and within the country. I'll put it that way. Just on a personal level, some of the things that I have in mind, things going well at the day job. And also, I think what's been different lately, or at least in the past few months here, is making the correlation between how the day job can better put me in a position to do that thing it is that I want to do, however many years from now that is. And I realize I'm speaking cryptically, and there are reasons for that. But I don't know that everyone makes that connection where it's like, all right, you know, I do want to just focus on this next 12 months or this next 24 months, but what types of things can you do in the role that you're in today to help you get to that position or to that state, whatever it is, faster? And if not faster, what types of things can you do that'll have you be more prepared when you finally get there? So, you know, focusing on the 2017, but also thinking about what I can do in my current role to better sharpen the axe. I forget what that saying is. There's some saying about sharpening the saw. I don't remember what it is. Do you know what I'm talking about? There's some saying, keeping the something sharp.
There is a sharpen the saw activity. I only know because I'm going through it in part of my executive leadership program. But I don't remember the exact quote for the purpose of the sharpen the saw activity, of which mine was to listen to NPR. There was like five you could choose from, like TED Talks, NPR. I think you could develop in your own activity. So, and that being said, for, you know, no plug, but that I'm actually now that made me an NPR listener. I listen to it on the way into work and it keeps me fairly well informed. but because ignorance is bliss, usually terrified.
Yeah. And I think that's a good example because it's something that's low hanging fruit. You don't have to go out of your way to be able to do it. You can just be driving in or you're at the gym and you put in some headsets or some earbuds and you can learn something or stay sharp on the fly. So maybe that's something that people can look into too. If you're like, damn, I'm just trying to do something simple this year to get better each week. Maybe it's listening to a new type of podcast or listening to a new type of show that presents information in a way that you wouldn't normally think about it. So
sharpen the saw is one of the 7 habits of highly effective people meant to discuss self-renewal, self-care, self-respect, and self-improvement. Sharpen the saw.
There it is. There it is. I knew it was something like that. I was like, sharpen the blade, the saw.
Iron the iron.
Sharpen yourself. I knew it was something like that, but there we go. Great book overall, too, by the way.
And if you have a question of your own that we can help you answer or saw that we can sharpen, don't forget to comment on the website or email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com.
Indeed. And so we want to thank everyone for listening to this episode. And of course, if you support what we're doing, consider becoming a P&B patron. That's also a potential way for you to be featured on the podcast. These folks are the financial supporters of the show who enable us to create more and do more for you, the listener. To learn more, visit paychecksandbalances.com/patron. I will spell it out this time, P-A-T-R-O-N. And we have some other great perks there for you, the listener. So definitely drop by and check that out. Once again, paychecksandbalances.com/patron. And hit us with the 5 stars on the iTunes.
And don't forget to join our email list where we share helpful stories we read throughout the week, actionable work and money tips, and much more. You can sign up by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email.
There it is. So again, thanks for listening. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.